Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Add This
to Your List.
I'm Fumi, joined by Mark and Tom. What up, dude?
What's up?
Happy 2020. The future is now. World War III.
Yeah, that's right. 2020. Yeah. This is our first episode back in the new decade.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What did you just say? The future is now?
The future is now. And then I said World War III. Ooh, sorry.
Maybe. Seriously.
I don't know. Too soon or, you know.
Or reality.
Like, literally in the thick of it right now. Yeah. Like, what's about to happen. Yeah. So this episode, we're going to get into our normal. We're headless.
We're headless.
We're the headless horseman.
We're the headless horseman. We're going to get into our...
She will never...
What do you call H&H?
She will never remember this.
I'll never get it. Never. All I get is headlines. Housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Housekeeping and headlines are lists. And then we got some fun for talk about in the C block. What's going down in 2020?
Yes. But before we get into that, can we talk about the holidays? Because I just realized I didn't even ask, like, what you guys did for your holidays. I think, Foom, you said you were in Jersey.
Same with me.
No. Chicago.
Oh, Chicago.
And Jersey.
Okay. And Tom, you were in Jersey.
Yep.
I was in Maine, sick as a dog, coughing, but I learned how to... I learned how to ski, everyone. I don't think I told
you
guys.
It's hard.
I learned how to ski. It's hard, but it's super fun as long as you're on, like, the little bunny slopes. But I thought it would be awful and frustrating, and I would just want to leave immediately, but I liked it, guys.
Cool.
Did you know how to snowboard?
Oh, God. I don't even want to try snowboarding. That, to me, I know I'll trip.
Snowboarding is easier than skiing, actually.
Oh, it is?
That's what I heard.
Really? Okay.
Because it's all about your balance on just keeping yourself straight versus skiing, because you have to, like, proportion your legs a certain way, right?
Yeah. Yep. You got to really, like, be pigeon-toed and, like, you know. Yeah. But so real quick, I wanted to tell you guys something that I think you both will find really interesting. You know that site Cameo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Cameo, in case you don't know it, it's like various celebrities, in quotes, make little videos for you. So I actually got that as a Christmas present for Greg. I got a 90 Day Fiancé person named Darcy, if you watch. He loves 90 Day Fiancé. I got her to record him a video, and it was great, and it was funny. But so we were looking through the Cameo site, and did you know how expensive some of these people
are? Yeah, some of the Howard Stern people charge like $500.
Yes, like Chris Harrison, the Bachelor, the host of The Bachelor, is $500 for like a 2-minute video. Foom.
But wait, what do they do?
They just say hi. They're like, hi, Foomy. Your friend Mark wanted me to make you this video. Merry Christmas. It's just like talking into their phone. It's nothing like fancy. $500.
Yeah.
Bethany Frankel.
That's actually kind of cheap. I thought that you guys were going to say it's a lot more.
Oh, God. No, I paid...
I thought it was like thousands.
I paid 50 for a 90 Day Fiancé, and I was like, okay, this is kind of steep. Like, back in the day, like, when, like, Sonia and Dorinda did it, it was like $50. Now, the Housewives are like 200, Bethany Frankel's 300. I was really surprised. These cameos are not cheap.
Making money, honey,
They have 7 days to do it, and yeah, I guess that is some nice, easy money to just... Do it from your bed, do it from your bathroom, and like...
If you don't like the message or they say the name wrong, like, do you request them to do it again?
That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what happens if they, like, make a mistake. I think
if you're not happy with services rendered?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, but it's quickly become, like, I read, like, the fastest startup, like, in history or something. Like, they made so much money for the holidays, so... And I'm one of their customers, so there you go.
It's called Cameo.
Mm-hmm. Cameo. Mm-hmm. Oh, check it out, Foom. You'll love it. There's lots of fun reality people. Oh, yeah.
How'd you guys know about that?
Howard Stern.
I heard about it. Oh, Howard Stern. Okay. I heard about it from, like, friends, and it's been around for, like, 2 years, but just lately is really blowing up.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into our Hollywood and headlines.
Housekeeping.
Tom. Wait, no. Hollywood and headlines.
Oh my God.
But, you know, Foom, you got to break this episode because it kind of is relevant to call it Hollywood. I'm going to talk about the Golden Globes.
Right. Yeah, there talk about the Golden Globes.
So, award season has officially kicked off, as in, like, actually dolling out the awards. We've been talking about award season for months now, but it's finally here. Golden Globes. Big winners. 1917 won Best Picture, and if you stick around, you may hear me talk about it a little later in this episode.
Ooh.
So that won Best Picture Drama. What won Best Picture Comedy? It is escaping
me.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time.
Womp womp.
Which I love Quentin, but boo. Yeah.
I mean, that movie is getting every goddamn nom. It won 3 awards from the Globes. I mean,
yep.
I know.
Yep, because Brad Pitt won Best Supporting Actor. On the TV side, we had Fleabag win Best Comedy. And Succession on HBO won Best Drama. Now, I have zero interest in that show, but Brian Cox also won Best Actor for that show. So maybe there is something to
it. You should check it
out.
Yeah,
you like it?
Yeah.
I like it.
Oh,
I think it's a very sophisticated. I mean, it deals with a very niche world, but I think the way that they do it is really interesting. There's a lot of like power play and power grabs. It's good drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Jeremy Strong. He's an interesting actor.
I've heard nothing but amazing things about it. My whole goal was to watch it over the holidays, but instead I just caught up on a lot of awards movies, but I am definitely checking Succession out in 2020.
Yeah. Interesting. Yes. Okay. And then, of course, Renee Zellweger, she won Best Actress in a Drama for
Judy. And her
Judy.
Southern twang came out.
It did. And I.
Where is Renee
really
from?
Unprepared.
Can we clarify this, please?
She's from Texas.
I don't understand. She has a Southern accent, then she does it. Then she's British. She's got a face. Then she's a new one. Like, who is Renee?
Renee.
Who is she?
She's just trying to win her second Oscar, girl. That's who she is.
She's probably going to win,
though. Really,
she's phenomenal.
I think that she was very surprised. I sent you guys that article about how nervous she was because she hadn't been at the Golden Globes since 15 years.
Well, it
was
17,
I think,
because
she
looked really unprepared. Yeah. I don't know. Her speech was like, it's like, girl, you know you're going to sweep this award season. Why are you up there babbling like you don't know?
But maybe she really didn't. But I'm going to, Judy's on my list. I'm going to watch it. Now I'm intrigued.
I definitely want to see it too. I know, Tom, you loved her in it. And I feel like she was maybe not unprepared, but like she just seemed almost like, maybe that's why her twang came out again, because she hasn't been living in L.A. or New York. I think she moved back home to the South.
Hmm.
So maybe she just feels so out of this world that she's like, oh, crap, like, I'm back in it, you know? But it was great, and she looked cute. But, the twang really, like, threw everyone.
Yeah.
Because she's never had that thick of an accent, but, yeah.
And what the fuck was Joaquin
Phoenix saying? He won Best Actor for Joker.
About?
He also... His speech, like, I feel like he had something to say, but he took such long pauses that it was
just
really...
Well, he's super
really
awkward.
Awkward.
Super awkward. Yeah, I was not surprised at all. I knew when he went up there, we were going to get some odd mumbling thing. And did you hear that after he won the award, he did not want to go to the press room, but someone...
Yeah, he was giving them a lot of trouble.
Yes, he was furious. He did not want to answer questions. He wanted to just go home. But, I mean... You
like,
know,
why so
sorry.
Cranky, Joaquin? You're a good-looking man. You're charming. Like, just, like, you're obviously in this profession for a reason. There are consequences that come to being an actor and a star. Like, deal with it, man. Deal with it.
Mm-hmm. He probably just thinks of himself as a thespian.
Probably,
as an actor.
Yeah, I think
of the theater.
He definitely...
And so he just doesn't want to have to do the theater. So he doesn't want to have to do the other thing.
Well, it comes along with it. It's part of the job.
Having a career.
But also, Awkwafina, made history. And then, I'm, of course, going to butcher her name, but the female composer for Joker also made history.
Yep.
The Globes. That's exciting.
So
that's pretty cool.
I felt so bad for her because I could tell that, like, obviously, like, when was the last time you saw a female go up there for a composer award? So that was nice. But I also could tell people were like, could you please stop talking and get off the stage?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's just that award. That's like one of the only like technical kind of like creative awards that like
that they give out.
That it's like, oh, yeah, this isn't just about the celebs.
I also loved Rami. His speech.
That was a nice surprise.
I told you guys.
Yes.
So it was on my list.
Yep, it was.
It's such a good show.
Absolutely. And
his acceptance speech was cute.
Super cute. What did he say? Like, you guys all think I'm
like
an editor.
I know you guys have never seen my show.
And everybody laughed. Yeah.
But I had to laugh so hard because he does look like an editor. Like, it was hilarious.
Yeah. So cute.
And you know,
can I just say, I feel like next year, Tiffany Haddish and Salma Hayek have to host.
That all depends on if the movie makes money at the box office, though, I think, right?
I'm sure it will, but, like, they were really funny.
I think it looks so cute. Yeah, they were.
I thought they were a good duo, for sure, with the whole, like, after Michelle Williams did her thing, which, oh my god, which, by the way, guys, I'm stating it here and now, Busy Phillips is so fucking annoying.
Oh my god, the fake tears? Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm so over her. I'm so over her. Yeah. Anyway.
I will tell you one of the...
How does Michelle always get two tickets? Because she always brings... And Tom is like, can I say what I want to say?
Thank you.
Sorry. But wait. I just have to say, why does Michelle always get two tickets? She always brings like a date and then Busy. Like,
I know. It's weird. They're like, oh, Michelle Williams is invited. Okay.
All right. Here's
an extra one.
Yeah. One of the things that really surprised me was Olivia Colman this year. First of all, girl, what was that dress? And second of all, what was that speech? After, like, wooing America last year with your Oscar-accepting speech, you were just like, oh, I'm boozy. Like, that can't be your excuse every time to give
She probably was bored.
She might have been bored.
Just like, ugh, whatever. Like, I've been here, done this. I already have all the other awards I could possibly want.
She might have been really thrown that she's like, oh, crap, I won a Golden Globe last year, and now this year, like, shit. Like, I'm really part of this group. But it is funny, Tom. I thought the same thing. Last year, do you remember, I was like, basically iconic when she called Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz her bitches.
Yes, and then she was like, Lady Gaga. Yeah.
Yes. And then this year, very demure. Maybe like she was almost like still in her crown character. I don't know. But yeah, that was a difference. Definitely.
I think she honestly was probably just wasted. I think she was.
Yeah, well, by that
maybe,
point.
And,
yeah.
And like overthinking it, trying to really be calm and like professional. Yeah.
What'd you guys think of Ricky Gervais?
Oh, jinx. There you go. What'd you think, Tom?
He was funny at first, but then he looked really bored, like he wanted to go home. So it was like, don't take the gig, man. I know it pays $100,000, but dude, like...
Oh, does it?
Yes.
Is that all
it
pays?
Yeah, I Googled it. It pays $100,000.
Oh, I mean, that's not bad.
I was like kind of... I thought he was funny in the beginning, and then he seemed bored, and then his jokes just fell flat, and then he clearly couldn't see the prompter because he kept reading all of his jokes on the card, which I thought was weird.
They should go host list.
You think?
Yeah, maybe they could. Maybe they could, because I think it did really well for the Oscars.
Yeah. Well, and for a while.
Or the Emmys, or whoever went host list.
I think the Oscars. Yeah, that was the whole Kevin Hart thing. But yeah, and the Globes, for a while there in the past, always were host list because it's just such a jam-packed show. So yeah I think it works. But I totally agree with you guys. I thought in the beginning, oh my gosh, so funny and so scathing, but it was funny, and then very quickly it dived, and honestly it wasn't fun. Whenever I saw him, like, I literally was cringing, and you could feel the energy through the TV fade whenever he came out, and it's like,
totally,
not only are you pretending you don't want to be here, like, you seem straight up angry you're here, which it just felt weird.
Yeah,
I will say that the joke about Leo with the Irishman, that was hilarious. It was dying.
What was that one again?
When he was like, they screened the Irishman, and by the time the movie ended, Leo's girlfriend, he was too old to date him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He hit some great...
Yeah, he had
great...
funny stuff.
Oh, my God, yes. Stuff. Absolutely. Yeah.
But, yeah. And then, you know, with the Golden Globes, and then you had all these other... It was, like, nomination day.
Yes, nomination. Like, I think... And I was saying this offline. I think because, as we're all seeing, the awards... window this year is very short. Like, each week it's an award show, everything's much tighter. I mean, in the past, you remember the Oscars used to be like in March. This year they are February 9th. It's all happening in like the span of like a month and a week. So as of this recording, it was a big day because it was like the DGA nominees, the PGA, and the BAFTAs, the British Oscars. And what I thought was super cool about the BAFTAs, it's all still very white, and we think it's kind of funny that the president of the BAFTAs is infuriated about the lack of diversity, and it's like
well, Lupita, Cynthia, Alfrey, Awkwafina, Susan Yang,
right.
Like,
J-Lo. And plus all their British people, which I'm sure they've done some great stuff we haven't even seen, you know. But the coolest thing is that the BAFTAs are now, I'm fairly certain, the first televised bigger scale award show that has a best casting category. Yay, BAFTAs.
Oh, good for you. That must make you so happy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
I mean that.
How many movies do you guys see where it's like, wow, this cast? And like, no one ever thinks that casting is like actual real work.
Yeah. Like think about just literally... like in terms of American movies, like Knives Out, right? Like putting together that cast is like, hello.
Absolutely. Yes. And Bombshell. And
yep.
Little Women.
Little Women,
I mean, like,
yeah.
There's so many great ensembles. Hustlers, I just feel like there are so many. Marriage Story, you know? So I'm just so happy, and hopefully this is the slow start to it, because, I mean, there's a literal documentary out there that I saw a couple years ago called, I think it's called Casting By, all about the lack of interest in ever giving an award to casting people. And there are directors in it that say, like, I'm the one that cast them. Like, I'm the one that gives the final yes. And it's like, well, yeah, but you need to be presented options that other people go through for you. You don't put the posting out and go through all 1,000 actors. So it's such bullshit. But so the BAFTAs have noticed Joker, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Personal History of David Copperfield. That must be a British film. And The Two Popes as their top casting nominees. So
cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's pretty cool.
I just have to, I really have nothing to say about the BAFTAs because I'm just like so bored by their nominations. But I need to understand why Margot Robbie is nominated for Once Upon a Time. I need someone to like explain that.
Well, Bombshell, you'll hear, maybe next week I'll talk about it, or one of us will talk about it, because I did see it. Bombshell, I definitely think she deserves a nom and is a total contender to possibly win. But yeah, Once Upon a Time, I mean, guys, she had like maybe two lines. And yes, whenever she is on screen,
all she did was like dance around and smile and be blonde. Yes. Like literally, that's all she did. I just don't understand.
I could see the role description. Sharon Tate must dance, smile, and be blonde. Right? Because that is it. Like, but what? I will give it to her in that movie, which we all have now seen and we all agree is kind of meh for a Quentin Tarantino movie. Every scene she's in, she did really grab my attention, but that doesn't necessarily mean here are nominations. That just means good job, you did something with very little.
Yep.
You know?
I honestly would have preferred to have seen Lena Dunham get a nomination for Once Upon a Time.
God. In that nightgown, that dirty ass nightgown. Yeah, like, you know what? I'd like to see Dakota Fanning, who really surprised me Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
And Margaret Qualley, too.
Oh, I don't see the appeal at all in her, but sure. Something about that actress, I'm like, yeah, and. But you know what? I have to say, because over the holidays, I rewatched Us, which we all obviously saw, talked about it last year when it came out, all kind of had our reservations about it. Maybe I'm the only one, but like, no Elizabeth Moss nominations at all for Best Supporting Actress? Cause
oh, yeah, she was good in that, yeah.
She was at times outshining Lupita, so I'm just surprised, like, you know, she was funny and then freaky, you know, so I don't know, but it's a Margot Robbie world.
And then I just wanted to talk about really quickly, I saw this really interesting article in Hollywood Reporter about like the industry's predictions for 2020, and one thing I thought was really interesting is that we have talked about Apple Plus on this podcast. We were really excited when it launched. We all checked out at least one show from there. But a major prediction is that Apple is going to just kind of like wash their hands of going it themselves and buy Disney.
Mm.
And they can afford it. And I think it'd be really interesting to see if we start to see waves of that happening.
I mean, can Apple honestly afford to buy Disney?
Apple is a $1 trillion business. So yeah. It wouldn't even hurt their pockets. Like, they wouldn't even, like, see.
Jesus. Damn. So, you think...
like, missing
money.
Oh, my
gosh. Because I thought Disney was, like, had the most money. But I could definitely see Apple buying Netflix, for sure. And, I mean, I think that would be in their best interest. Since, you know, their slate of shows is kind of meh. But, wow. If Apple bought Disney, oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be huge?
I'd be a little freaked out, honestly. I'd be freaked.
Yeah, well, totally. And I think that that might be a concern about, like, would, you know, the government even allow that to happen. But I thought that was a really interesting prediction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Totally. Something big like that will definitely happen this year. I know it.
All right. Well, yeah.
All right. Well, are we done with our housekeeping and headlines?
I think we are.
Because I think it's time to get into our list. So, ladies and gents, it's a new year, but it's the same podcast. So this is the time when the three of us share our recommendations or our warnings of what to watch and what to skip. So why don't we go with Tom? You can lead us off.
Okay. I teased 1917, so I thought, let me start with that one. 1917, right? As we just said, it is the Golden Globe winner this year for Best Picture Drama. Add it to your list. I agree with that decision from the HFPA 1,000 bajillion percent. So fucking good. Now, I will preface this by saying I am a war movie person. I love history. Yep. I'm a history buff. But this movie, guys, is the real deal. Plot is very simple. Two guys are serving in the British Army during World War One, and they get called by their general, and they're told that they have to go walk about 6 or 7 miles. Right? Doesn't seem that far in distance, but think about it. It's 1917. They have to walk 6 or 7 miles, and they have to hustle their asses because they have to let a different battalion know that while it appears the Germans have retreated, they have not. They are actually hiding and waiting for British to come into this area so that they could ambush them. And to make matters interesting, one of the men who's asked to go and do this task, he has a brother in that other battalion who is played in a cameo by Richard Madden. So, stakes are high, right? And basically, the guys understand the urgency of having to get there in time. And they go walking through the trenches and through the fields of France, which is, you know, deep, deep, deep in trench warfare, to try and deliver this message. And the cool thing about this movie, why it is so good, why it is so intense, is that it is designed to look like the whole movie was shot in a single take. Much like Birdman a couple years ago, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So, guys, wow. I cannot tell you the amount of, like, they must have gone to, like, middle of nowhere Europe because they had to dig miles and miles of trenches because, I mean, they're just, like, walking through the trenches for, like, a 5-minute scene and the camera does not cut for one single second. It's just absolutely an amazing, stunning feat. It's a technical marvel. The acting is superb. You will cringe. I told Fumi this offline. Fumi was a very huge fan of Dunkirk. I was not.
Right.
Because I thought that one of the things I did not like about Dunkirk is that you didn't get to know even these soldiers' names or who they were.
Agreed.
And so you kind of, there was kind of a wall between the audience and the characters that you were supposed to be rooting for. But Dunkirk did have a high level of intensity. What I liked about 1917 is it has the same level of intensity as Dunkirk. However, you do get to connect with these two boys that are trying to make this seemingly impossible feat happen. Cannot say enough about it. Sam Mendes also won Best Director at the Golden Globes, which I think puts him on track to maybe win the Oscar. And I have to say, if he does, might. It is much deserved. There are, in addition to the cameo by Richard Madden, there's also a cameo by Benedict Cumberbatch and Colin Firth. So, those two Brits are always fun to see on the screen. Fumi, I know you said you're going to go see it this week. Mark, do you plan on seeing it?
Yes.
See it in a theater, like you... I promise you.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is a theater
absolutely.
Movie.
Absolutely.
That's why I'm like willing to spend money to see it. But I will say that I was interested in seeing the movie, but I didn't necessarily think I was like, like I could see it, I couldn't see it, like I really didn't give a shit. But after the awards for the Globes, and you talking about it, and then you saying that you think it's going to win for Best Picture, and then with the current climate that's happening right now, I'm thinking to myself, I think you might be onto something.
Maybe, we shall see, but it is so good. Go see it.
And it would be really interesting if it does get a ton of noms and potentially wins, because I, not that it kind of crept up on us, but it wasn't,
it did a little,
it wasn't as buzzed about as others were
right until about a month
ago. In there. Yeah. So it's interesting. And so wow, I didn't realize the whole movie is shot like it's one take, like Birdman, like you said, Tom. Wow, that's impressive. I'm sure
that is impressive.
I'm sure
I loved that about Birdman.
It definitely has cuts.
Oh,
like
you can see like
cuts, but
so for example, one of the characters, like there's bunkers in the trenches, right? And so they'll like have curtains up to like establish a bunker, and the characters will go into the bunker and move the curtain. And you see darkness, and then the camera swings around and pulls to watch them come in to that bunker. That's like the places where obviously they cut, and then they seamlessly edited it. So,
now, Tom, do you think that was the last episode we talked about our best of the, or two episodes we talked about our favorite of the year? Is 1917 your favorite of the year?
Absolutely.
Because you didn't see
it
then.
Blows End of the Century out of the water. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. He's correcting himself.
I am
okay,
correcting
everyone.
Myself. Okay. Second thing on my list, The Two Popes. I also love this movie very, very much. I've seen it twice, believe it or not. I usually don't
Are
do that.
Are you kidding?
I am not.
Fumi and I literally puked a little bit.
So I watched it the first time on the flight to Vegas when I went to Vegas with Jeff over the holidays really quickly to see Paula Abdul in concert.
Oh, that's right.
And then on Christmas Day, or Christmas Eve, excuse me, Jeff's mom and dad actually wanted to watch it again. So, and Jeff hadn't watched it on the flight with me, so I was like, all right, I'll sit through this again. So, two popes, add this to your list. Jonathan Pryce plays the current Pope Francis, and Anthony Hopkins plays the very creepy Pope Benedict, I guess. Yeah, that was his name, the Pope prior to Pope Francis. And basically, the movie chronicles how their relationships are very, very different, and how their approach to life and their ideologies are very different. They bash and clash heads almost. But it kind of goes through... It dramatizes the scenario in which Benedict had to resign because the things about the Catholic Church and their shady doings were starting to unravel, and how he basically approached Pope Francis and convinced him to not retire so that way he could be in running to become Pope and perhaps take the church into a new progressive era, one that he admittedly doesn't agree with, but he recognizes that, you know, the church is kind of in dire need of change if it's ever going to survive. What I like most about this movie, Anthony Hopkins was very good in the role as Benedict, but Jonathan Pryce, I really hope he gets an Oscar nomination because he nails Pope Francis. So good. Wow. I also really love the way the movie's shot. It's very bright. It's very vivid. There's a lot of white juxtaposed with red, right? Because these cardinals and priests and popes at the Vatican wear a lot of red. So that white and red together is really visually striking. Much of the movie also takes place at the Pope's hideaway residence, his summer residence, which is somewhere up by Lake Como in northern Italy near Milan. And that's a very peaceful and tranquil setting. And I thought it was interesting to see this conflict and turmoil that these two men were going through in such a peaceful setting. I love that juxtaposition. The writing was very good. Interestingly and oddly, you get a lot of backstory on Pope Francis, but you don't get any flashbacks or backstory on Pope Benedict. So that felt a little uneven to me because the movie's called The Two Popes and it's supposed to be about both of them. But that's really my only gripe about the movie. I thought it was excellent. And as somebody who's been in Catholic school literally all my fucking life, I was interested to see modern day church politics play out on the screen. So yeah, I liked it. I know Fumi, didn't like it.
I think you hit the nail right on the head. You were in Catholic school your whole life. Like, I was, to say that I was bored would have been like
an understatement.
I just couldn't do it. I was like 5 minutes in. I was like, knock me out. This is boring. I gotta keep it moving. Like, not a movie for me.
Did you finish it?
In any way, shape, or form. No, I couldn't do it.
Wow. Okay, yeah. I probably, to be honest, I have zero interest. I haven't even seen a trailer. I just have no interest. And then, I mean, maybe if it gets a Best Picture now, maybe I'll try to watch.
It probably
will.
But
it sounds like, you think it will? Yeah. It'll be like in the top, you know, 8 or 7 or 9 Oscar.
Given how it's faring so far in award season, yeah, I do.
I just feel like, I don't know if we're there yet to have 2 Netflix movies in the Best Picture race at the same time.
There could potentially be 3. There's going to be The Irishman and Marriage Story.
Oh my God, you're right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Wow. I would be shocked if we have 3 Netflix Best Pictures.
We'll see.
That's an interesting conversation,
yes.
Mark. I like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be shocking. Okay. Wow. All right. Foom, what do you have for us?
Well, I have a fun Netflix series that I talked about before the first season, and I'm going to talk about the second season. So I'm talking about you.
Me?
I'm talking about you. We get Joel Goldberg. He has left New York, and he is in LA under the new name Will Bettelheim. You guys, this is an add to your list. I think when I first initially talked about this show, I said that I hate watched it because I couldn't stand the girl that he was obsessed with.
Right. The blonde.
Yes. You, season 2, is so effing good. It is so funny. It is like, actually, there was a moment in the show that disgusted me and actually scared me.
Ooh.
It was such good storytelling. I don't know if it's because I live in LA. All of the LA jokes, like, had me on the floor dying.
Oh, wow.
Like,
oh,
it is, I can't wait. So good. So Will, or Joe, flees New York. He's trying to get away from the fact that he murdered his girlfriend, set someone up for the crime, and he flees to LA. And he still has the narration. He still, you know, talks about what's happening. And in the first episode, there was even a little twist because he obviously, you know, sees his latest victim, a girl named Love.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that.
And her brother's name is 40. You may think what? These are cheesy as fuck and stupid, but they're... parents obviously were like tennis people.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh.
It's so funny because it's not until you see the two of their twins, it's not until you see 40 and Love play tennis that you're like, oh, yep. Yeah, I see
it's
that
Love
now.
15-30-40 but- match a point.
But it's so good. They work at this, I don't even want to tell you where they work because part of the joy is like hearing it and then hearing Joe's explanation of it, but they just take your quintessential Venice, like, east side, west side, bougie, like, type of store, Whole Foods to the umpth degree. It's just so utterly hilarious.
Huh.
Watching Joe in this relationship that he fosters with Love is really fascinating and really interesting. The twists in season two, like, blew me away. Like, you start to kind of notice some things are a little off with some people. But by the time you get to the second to last episode, you're like mind blown. Like,
wow.
Holy shit. Like, it sets up for such a fun season three of where it's going to go, what Joe's going to do. So I really, 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 I cannot say enough. Like, watch season two of You. It's so good.
I do need to watch it. I still haven't seen season one. And that was originally on Lifetime, season
yep,
one.
It sure it was.
And I watched it when it was on Lifetime.
Right. So
and
season
it's so funny
two
to me,
probably feels a little bit bolder because of Netflix.
So much better. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So Lifetime initially had bought the two seasons, decided not to go ahead with season two. But I guess what ended up happening was nobody watched it on Lifetime.
Yeah.
Everybody watched it on Netflix. Everyone thought it was a Netflix show. And so Netflix was just like, hey, we'll keep the.
Yeah.
We'll keep
the By
series.
The way, yeah. Just because this came up today, too, everybody thinks Schitt's Creek is also a Netflix show. And it's like,
I was
That's
wondering
crazy.
Why you posted
yeah.
that on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
I was like,
most people don't even get Pop
it's a
TV.
Pop show. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pop TV's, like, all over the streaming cable that I get, so I figured, like, that's, like, Bravo. Like, that, like, everyone, wow, weird. Also, Foom, did you know that even though You, season two, I thought this was so fascinating, it came out, what, the day after Christmas, and of course it's
mm-hmm.
been all the talk ever since in these last couple weeks. Just in those last few days of 2019, it cracked the top five, it was number five on the most popular Netflix shows of 2019.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I binged it. I watched the first seven episodes back to back to back to back.
Oh, my God.
And then I took a break, and then I watched the last three, like, a couple days later. But it was – I just kept having to know what was going to happen next
oh,
and
wow.
what's going to happen next.
Okay.
So it was really – I'm telling you, it's really – and it's also just so funny. Like, there are just moments where I was just dying of laughter.
Okay, cool. All right.
It's really, really good. So I don't know what happened – whatever was season one, it was good. The main characters were whatever. Season two – the characters are annoying, but they're kind of lovably annoying.
Mm, okay.
Like, it makes you laugh.
Like all LA people.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, next thing on my list. I'm sticking on the Netflix train because, you know, I'm the Netflix bitch.
Oh, yeah.
I got Don't Fuck With Cats.
Oh, boy, I'm scared.
Before I get into this, I have to just read you guys a meme that I saw.
Oof.
And it was like... this meme page on Instagram called insta.single, they're like, everyone talks about how much 2019 sucked, but it started off with a Netflix documentary about an old dude saying he would suck dick for water. And then a few weeks later, another old dude said he jacked his daughter's kidnapper off. And that's not great, but it is what it is. And they were talking about the two documentaries about the fire festival
yep.
and then Abducted in Plain Sight. Both of which, like I talked to you guys about.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Abducted in Plain Sight. Blew my mind.
Uh-huh.
So, this documentary, Don't Fuck With Cats. Let's talk about, I don't know, I don't remember if it came out at the end of 2019 or started in the beginning of 2020.
I think
end of
2019.
Like,
Yeah.
Girl, such we're only 6 days into 2020. Freaking.
Well, they had stuff that came out on the first.
Yeah. It's all such a blur.
A good documentary. So, Don't Fuck with Cats, obviously, title, you may assume it's about cats, right? Like, yeah. Everybody loves kittens, and the whole thing is, like, the internet. Like, you can post basically anything you want on the internet, but don't post shit about cats. You got Catter Day that always trends on, like, on Twitter on Saturdays. Like, people love cats, right? So, this documentary, you think it's about that. It is not about that. It is about a sick and twisted guy named Luca Magnotta, who was a Russian-Canadian who, like, murders a man. Oof. It's like fucked up what this guy does. It is so crazy. And it's basically about how a bunch of internet sleuths, people who like were on a Facebook group page who loved cats, discovered this guy and basically helped authorities catch him. It's like so fascinating and so interesting. It like I cannot say enough about how it just blew my mind. I would sit there and I would watch and I would fast forward through the parts that were like really disturbing.
Yeah, because they are
like
they show it, Foom?
Yeah, they do. Ooh. And it's really, really bad. It's really, really, really bad. They show what he did to the cats and they showed what he did with the man. So
and
it's
he posted all this online. Is that what had happened?
He posted the murder online.
Oh my God. Wow.
So people could see the murder, but obviously not really understand or like know what they're watching. God. Until the body was found.
And when did this happen? Was that just like
this happened?
I feel like it was kind of recent. Yeah.
In 2012.
Oh, okay. All right.
The murder happened in 2012 and this guy did what he did in 2012. Yeah. So it's been a minute. But it's such a messed up documentary.
You said it spooked like, you out, so right?
It did, yeah. I watched it late at night, and because I kind of like to do that sometimes. And normally I don't get scared, but that one kind of had me checking my locks a little bit.
I'm freaked. No thanks. Because
he's so twisted. He was like obsessed with being famous, the murderer, and the way that he can manipulate like pictures. And basically, what he did is he took his face and just posted it on pictures of like other people like all over the world to make it seem like he was this like international model, but he really wasn't. Like it was twisted.
Huh.
It was a twisted documentary. So watch Don't Fuck with Cats. I think it's
I was gonna say it's three
episodes.
It's really
right? Not a long,
and they're like really 40 minutes each. They're not like an hour each. Yeah,
yeah, like you
it's
could
perfect for you
this.
Tom.
Yeah.
Exactly. You could go through this so freaking fast, but I cannot stress enough that if you're an animal person, and I am, and I have a cat, like, I was not able to watch those scenes. I had to fast forward, or I just closed my eyes and closed my ears.
Oh,
I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But it's really good to just watch basically how a bunch of strangers on the internet used their trolling for good.
Yeah.
All right. They were good trolls. Interesting.
good trolls.
Good for you, trolls. Wow. Okay, well, I'm spooked just by you talking about it, so I might have to pass on that. But but listeners, did you know that this episode is basically cats themed because I'm about to talk about
meow.
Cats.
Meow, meow, meow.
So as Please. We know, I know we haven't, you know, been on the waves on the air for a couple weeks over the holidays, but as we know by now, Cats made a big crazy splash, lots of CGI issues. Apparently they took themselves out of the running for a lot of awards consideration because there was so much backlash. Yes. The director Tom Hooper apparently like had this
he's in hiding
he's in the witness protection program. This, as of right now, as of this recording, we have no idea where he is in the world. But he like apparently fixed the movie after it was already in theaters and like had the studio, which literally I read on Deadline has never happened before.
Never happened before.
Ooh. So yes, but let me just tell you, Greg and I were not feeling, we were sick. And so we're like, what are we going to do New Year's Eve? We're feeling sick. Let's go to the movies. Let's go see Cats on the big
screen. Now, why
did
you guys decide to go see those?
Because why not? It's so, we were so curious. How bad can it be? It was getting It was basic. Whatever was happening in Don't Fuck with Cats was happening to this movie. And so we were curious. We're like, it can't be that bad. Is it really that bad? It's got cult movie written all over it. You know what? Let's sneak in some wine and let's go. So we saw like a 7:30 movie. Us, an old couple, and a mom and a daughter. My kind of audience.
Not you said us, an old couple, and a mom and a daughter. Uh-huh. You can literally name.
Oh yeah, literally. I was like, oh, hey, Nancy. Hey, hey, Michelle. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Fred.
So it was the perfect audience. It was quiet, and we were all there to see a spectacle. Now, keep in mind, I had never seen Cats the Musical, but I've known that it's got a love-hate thing. It's obviously got its dedicated following, but it's mostly a big, you know, people make fun of it. So I didn't really know much. I just knew I'm going to see something weird, and let's drink this wine in my tumbler, and let's have the ball. And guys, I'd say add Cats to your list. And
I'm not joking.
No, I have to tell you, the critics are really, really rough on this movie.
Really?
Keep in mind, guys, when we all saw the trailer a couple months ago, we all were like, huh?
What's happening?
When we all heard the news a year ago, plus, that they were doing Cats the Movie Musical, we all went, huh? Yeah. No matter what, this subject matter, this content always an uphill battle. It's always going to be an uphill battle. It's always going to be a head scratcher, right? It's literally adults like crawling on all fours, singing, going through the trash.
I wish people could see what you're doing right now.
Like, oh, and guys, they are slinking. They are slinking. They're like, you know, and guys, it's really mesmerizing. And I'm not pulling your leg. I'm not, you know.
But what is the plot? What is it about?
That is a great question. I've seen the movie and I still don't know what it's about.
Cats.
It's just New York City. So basically. No, wrong. In the source. I'm going to teach you. It's in London.
Oh.
And so it starts off with our main cat is Victoria, played by newcomer Francesca Hayward.
Is she an American short hair, a British long hair?
Oh, God. I don't know what you're talking
Tabby
about.
Tabby Maine Coon.
But she's thrown away by her human owners. And it's really cool how they do it. Like, you know, you see the actor with a little bag and then all of a sudden, you know, because then we're all, you know, we're watching small little cats. So they make it seem, you know, the sets are all large and everything. And a lot of it's, of course, CGI. But then, you know, a big bag is there and out comes this human in this cat outfit. But so she is kind of thrown away in this alley and meets the Jellicles. Now, I didn't really know. I didn't know if Jellicles, because I'm not a cat person. I don't know anything about them. I'm a dog person. So I did not know if Jellicles was like a real cat, but apparently it's not. It's a fictional line of cats, family of cats. And so they're all like, we're the Jellicles. And, you know, oh, Victoria. And they're all like smelling her. And it's really, it made me think of like, you know, weird 80s movies that like are very obscure. Like, I'm telling you guys, go see it. Pay as little as you can. Go to a matinee. Go drunk. Go after brunch. See it on the big screen because it is so wild. I had really never seen anything like it.
You're about to tell me to go see Cats on the big screen. And when I tell you to go see 1917, a war movie on the big screen, you go, oh, really?
Yeah, because like, are they slinking around and singing? No. Is Jennifer Hudson singing her heart out and snot is coming out of her nose?
Ew!
I am not lying. Okay. This is my biggest thing with this movie. This is my biggest thing. There's so much CGI, like they're little, you know, I almost feel like they didn't even need to worry about the CGI. Just put them in, we know they're humans in a costume, but every little hair is moving and to the point where like when they turn their heads, like sometimes their faces don't match up with their bodies. So like,
oh no.
Yeah, it's a little rough. But like Jennifer Hudson, I'm like, you guys didn't want to like CGI a little bit of the snot away? She is snotting throughout I don't really understand.
That is nasty. Why?
What's
that about?
Her character is the famous Grisabella. Like, you know, the big, you know, memory and like the big songs of the show she sings, of course. And she's good, a little grating at times, but like she's kind of this, she was the hot shit cat. And now she's sort of like this homeless, messy one that they all kind of make fun of. And so she's always crying. And guys, the snot literally goes into her mouth. Her face is full of snot. It was wacky.
Ew.
And like Judi Dench, who's like acting her ass off for an old lady. And she's looking very regal in her cat outfit. I'm like, you didn't want to CGI like her nose hair? Like she's got like something coming out of her nose. I was like, this is weird. But I have to say, Jason Derulo did not think he would be good. He's fantastic in the movie.
How's Taylor Swift?
Rebel Wilson made me laugh. She's fantastic. James Corden is a little, you know, like, I don't know. He was sort of chewing the scenery. Taylor Swift, I have to tell you, I don't know if this is a spoiler, so I'll just say it's a spoiler. Beware, everyone. She's in the movie for literally like 2 minutes, maybe less, sings one song that honestly she should not have sung. It does not fit her voice in any way. And again, this is coming from someone who does not even really know the show. But when I heard her lower register sing this song and try to hit these notes, I was like, oh, guys, no, 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 no. I understand they wanted...
Oh, so she's not even in the movie like that?
She
made it seem like she was Adlander.
Nope. Also, the weird thing about Cats is a lot of the roles kind of just have one song. But, like, they're kind of in it throughout. But, like, they just each kind of have their big moment. And then, okay, off they go. Taylor literally is in it for her moment. And then she leaves. It was so obvious. Like, she only had 2 days to shoot. And then she was, like, on tour. So they're like, okay, let's use Taylor somehow. But she honestly is more distracting than part of the ensemble. So, you know. But again, I understand why they had her. But honestly, guys, I know this is crazy. I know you think I'm high right now. But go see it. It's really wacky. It made me think of like Blade Runner and like these weird, strange fantasy sci-fi things. Like this felt 80s all over it. And maybe that's why I liked it, because it was just so odd. Idris Elba is acting his ass off as this villainous character. He's in it with his green eyes. Like, there was a lot of work involved, which I think also is just why I am recommending it. The choreography is sick. The camera movements were really interesting. I mean, I'm telling you, the critics were really hard on this movie when they know it was gonna be weird to begin with. So you just gotta know going in, I'm not really going to fully understand what's going on, but I'm here to just see a spectacle, baby.
Okay.
Okay. So add Cats to your list. Watch it after you see Don't Fuck with Cats. Then, to wrap up our list, ladies and gentlemen, I have another movie that came out during the holidays on Christmas Day, and that is a movie I was very excited to see, Little Women. Yes, Little Women 2019, directed by Greta Gerwig, written and directed by Greta, who has apparently been a fan of Little Women ever since she was a kid. So she put together this film with a really great cast. We have Saoirse Ronan, we have Timothy, Laura Dern. You guys have seen the ads. You know who's in it. I'm going to say add this to your list, definitely. It's a beautiful film. So it's got a lot of heart. It's really striking. Everything about it is very stunning. And you could tell, again, much like Cats, there was a lot of work put into this, a lot of thought, probably even more so than Cats. But, you know, there's a lot of love here. Now, I am a massive fan of the 90s version. I've actually bonded with Tom's friend Lori over our love of the 1994 version with Winona Ryder and Claire Danes, Kirsten Dunst, Susan Sarandon, Christian Bale. And so, obviously, like, as I'm watching this one, I'm thinking a lot about that one. And I think, ultimately, I do still prefer that one. I don't know if it's because I just saw it when I was younger and I was really moved by it.
Was the feminism stuff of this update a little too in your face?
No, not at all. Oh, okay. No, I love that. I, if anything, I thought that stuff was great. Basically, just to compare the 90s to the 2019 version, everyone, the Greta Gerwig version has much more, which I was happy about, much more, you know, stuff to say about Joe, played by Saoirse Ronan, trying to sell her stories and like, oh, well, you know, a woman wrote this. And it had a lot of good male versus female issues of the time, which I liked, because the 90s one didn't hit that one too much. Mm-hmm. But there, something about the 90s one, I did have a little bit more fun. It was a little...
This is not as fun.
This is a heavy movie at times.
It's a little, I don't know.
Heavy on what? Like the women's movement? Or
No, I think it just is a little... I almost feel like Greta Gerwig is a little too close to it and loves it so much that it's a little serious when I missed some of the banter of the 90s, you know, and there's a lot of banter in this. There's some definitely good moments, but you know, Florence Pugh plays a very different, oh my gosh, what's her name? No, that's the other girl,
Eliza
Amy. Florence Pugh plays a very different Amy than Kirsten Dunst / Samantha Mathis. And I liked her, but at times she was distracting for me. Susan Sarandon, to me, was a better Marmy, their mom, than Laura Dern. I love Laura Dern. But, like, Laura Dern, to me, got very lost in this group. Like, I kind of didn't care about her, whereas Susan Sarandon, I cared about. And this might be the biggest spoiler, so I'm sorry, everyone. Just, you know, please know, you fast forward a minute if you need to. I think Beth's death in the 90s one, when Claire Danes dies, it is absolutely devastating. In this one, ooh, it is like over and done with in a second. She doesn't even have a proper, like, teary goodbye. Like, it's just over. It's very much Joe's reaction of the death. And I was like, damn, I wanted to cry. I did not feel emotional at all with the 2019 version like I did with
the 90s. How did you feel with Timothée Chalamet, his character's name, Lori, and Joe. How did we feel about them? Because I felt in the 90s version I was devastated when they decided, yes, like when she was like, I didn't want to be with him. I was like, but why? He loves you.
I know, right?
I hear that she does a really good job of making you believe that, no, Lori should be with Amy.
Interesting. I actually feel like this new version is more devastating when Joe says, no, you're not the one for me. Because I think Timothée is just so good at being broken up with.
Yep.
Like, literally watching him be devastated over Joe, immediately I went home and I kept reliving Call Me By Your Name. Like, he's just so good being broken up with. So I actually think this version is more devastating than the 90s version. But I actually disagree with whatever you were reading or hearing, Fumi. I feel like this version kind of makes it known that, like, Amy and Lori are actually not supposed to be together, but they're both just sort of, like, you know, doing it because it's nice and easy. And you know what I mean? Like,
oh, interesting.
I got that vibe. Even though from the get-go, when Amy, young Amy, meets Lori, she's like, my name's Amy, and it's really cute, and she's like immediately flirting with him. Something about it in this new version feels like, yeah, sure, why not? Whereas in the 90s, it felt a little bit more settled, you know. But this version, I feel like they settled.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, it's a little sad. That's why, you know, it's a very good version. If anything, I say watch both and get. I would love to make a master cut of the best moments from both, because together they make a great movie. But yeah, this one's a little sad at times, but not in the ways I thought. Like, I really wanted to cry when Beth dies because it's devastating. But man, she barely gets a send-off. I was like, what? It's very good. Add this to your list. There's lots of good stuff. And we'll see what happens, because I do think it deserves some Oscar awards, but then I don't know how it'll fall, because I don't know if Saoirse's really gonna get a nom like Winona did. We'll see. But add it to your list. So that is our list, everybody. To add it up, those were all ads, all six ads. We had 1917, The Two Popes, You Season 2 in LA, Don't Fuck with Cats, Cats, and Little Women.
Wow.
So check those out and tell us what you guys think on our social. Woo!
Cool. What a list. What a list. Cats is an ad. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever thought? All right, before we go, we talked about it being a new decade, a new year, all that good stuff. Let us talk about, since it is a new decade and a new year, what our most anticipated thing for this year is, as far as film and TV goes.
Yes.
Mark, why don't you start us off?
Oh, okay, thank you. So this was a little hard for me, not because I'm not excited about 2020, but there's a lot of stuff going on, and I was just trying to figure out, what am I most excited for? Is it the new Dune remake with Timothée? Is it A Quiet Place 2, which looks good? Is it In the Heights movie musical, which looks great? But I'm actually to go with some original stories that, as soon as I saw these trailers, my radar went off, and I was like, whoa, these both look super interesting. So I'm going to give a quick shout out to the new upcoming, and actually both movies come out in April, and I think as of right now, the same day. So maybe that's a good day, April 17th.
After my birthday.
I'm going to give a shout out. Yes, our birthday month. I'm going to give a shout out to the new horror movie Antlers.
Yes.
That looks really creepy. The three of us have talked about it offline. Looks very interesting. I still can't figure out what it is. It looks kind of supernatural monster movie, but I like that I don't know. It stars Carrie Russell, who we love. Jesse Plemons, I believe, is also in it. And it's directed by Scott Cooper, who's done some interesting higher brow things. So I really like this group of higher caliber talent, you know, doing a creepy, cold horror movie. So I'm super interested in how that will go. And I also have to give a shout out to, I think Promising Young Woman looks so good.
So good.
We talked about it. I feel like, Fumi, you might have sent us the trailer for that a couple weeks ago, yeah?
I think I did. And then I was talking about Margot Robbie, how I was impressed with the way that she's yes. like taking control of her career because she's producing
this. She's producing it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So she's producing Promising Young Woman. It's written and directed by a British a director, showrunner, and actress, Emerald Fennell, I believe is her name. She is the Killing Eve season two showrunner.
Yes, I was literally just going to say that. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Which I'm still super behind on Killing Eve, but that's amazing. So this girl's got great talent already. And it yep. stars Carey Mulligan in a role that we've never seen her do because she's always very demure and kind of plain and sometimes like in period movies. Here she's like all dolled up and she is yeah. sassy and she's kind of scary. Like I get the yeah. vibe that this is a little bit of a thriller because just from the trailer, check it out. It's got a sick cast. So many people, so many likable people. Molly Shannon, Bo Burnham, mm-hmm. Max Greenfield from New Girl, Alison Brie. But so basically, Carey Mulligan plays this girl who likes to go after men and seduce them by pretending she's so drunk that they take her home and she knows that these are the kind of guys that are going to want to take advantage of her. And then she flips the table yes. on them.
Yeah.
And she wants to make, you know, prove some lessons, teach them some lessons. And she writes, you see in the trailer, she kind of keeps a notebook. So I'm super intrigued how that will go. It seems dark and dirty and important. So I'm into those two movies for 2020.
I will say that for Promising Young Woman, I love the trailer. I do think that they give a lot away.
Yes.
Like, I feel like you pretty much know like what the storyline is. But I will say that I'd be interested to see the revenge that she enacts on them. Like, it's yeah. very obvious that it's all about like her tricking guys to
right.
see who's going to take advantage and who's not. So
yes.
I'm excited to see what she does to the ones who do.
I agree with
like,
you. I do
wait.
Think it gives a little too much away, but maybe the surprise will be not the story, but how far it goes or,
yeah.
or maybe there's some
yeah.
twists. We'll see, but looks really cool. So those are
it
mine.
Does. I love those. I'm basically the same.
Fumi.
So much like Mark, it was really difficult for me to figure out like what I was excited about. Like, I'm excited about Rihanna's new album. I can't wait for mm-hmm. Adele's. I am so excited for Tenet. It's like this obscure Christopher Nolan movie. Like, what is it gonna be about? Like, I don't know.
You love Christopher Nolan too.
I do.
I think a lot of people think it's about time travel, right? Is that the sense you get too?
Well, apparently Christopher Nolan's themes are very much centric. It's like, I don't forget what I was reading an article about, but like Inception was all about dreams. And then, I don't know. I forget what the article said, but apparently it's going to be theme on something like that.
Okay.
Future. So,
mm-hmm.
But I think I'll go with, out of all those, I think what I'm most excited about is Antebellum. It's this trailer starring Janelle Monáe in her first starring role. And when you see the trailer, you're like, wait, what am I watching?
It is mesmerizing.
And it's very much what's happening. And mm-hmm. it's, yeah, it's very much like what's happening. It's like you're on a plantation and all of a sudden you hear throughout the entire trailer a 911 operator. And then you're looking at the sky and they're looking at the sky and you see a plane. And it's like, well, there's no way that there's a plane. There weren't planes then. It's like so.
And then it cuts to modern day. Yeah. And she's like in an elevator.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So whatever this movie is about, I'm not necessarily sure, but all we know for sure is that it stars Janelle Monáe. She's some woman who lives in modern day, has a child, very sophisticated, like she takes care of herself. She probably has a really great job. And somehow she gets brought back to the antebellum South. So whatever it is, I don't know, but it looks fucking
yep.
fascinating.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. I think it's going to be really spooky, too, because there's, like, some ghostly girl.
Oh, yeah, in the hallway,
yep.
right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
I can't
yep.
wait.
Well, it looks like we all have a theme, because my pick is horror all the way. So, Mark, you had Stuck with Antlers. Fumi, you did Antebellum, mm-hmm. which is going to be some kind of horror thriller-esque kind of movie. For me, I'm not to be boring, but I'm going to go with horror as well. The most anticipated films for me, more than anything, y'all know I love Halloween, so I got to shout out Halloween. Halloween Kills.
Wow, I'm so surprised.
No surprise there. Kyle Richards is back in the role,
oh,
so we
yes.
know that Fumi's excited about that at least. Anthony Michael Hall is gonna play Tommy Doyle. Jamie Lee Curtis is back. Judy Greer is back. They released on Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis tweeted some really cool behind-the-scenes featurette, which showed really quick snippets of some footage from the movie that looked really good. So I'm excited because I really loved the 2018 version. But even more than Halloween, I'm really super excited for The Conjuring 3. And I believe the full title of the movie has been announced as The Conjuring 3, : The Devil Made Me Do It. Because it is not going to be a haunted house film, as the first two films were. This is going to be more of a courtroom drama, and it's a true story from Ed and Lorraine Warren's case files, in which it's the first time that anybody ever tried to use demonic possession as a reason why they murdered somebody in U.S. court history. So I think that is super clever. James Wan is back producing. He's not directing, which makes me a little bit nervous.
And Tom, do you know who is
the
directing?
The guy that directed La Llorona. I know. Yeah. But now, if you'll remember, I said with La Llorona that there was some potential, and I feel like the directing kind of made it fall short. So hopefully he learned his lessons. But Patrick and Vera are back as Ed and Lorraine, and they really do bring so much heart to the story. So hopefully it's a good
one. We're not a little nervous about, like, not being horror? Isn't that part of why we love The Conjuring
much? I bet, even though it might be courtroom, like, remember that great
Exorcism of Emily Rose? Yep. Like, exactly.
I'm sure it's not all, you know, set in a courtroom, but like that might make it feel even like, boom, you were even just talking about Primal Fear. Like some of these like very real life kind of case movies could feel super dark and scary.
Exactly.
Right?
I think this is a
good,
it's a fresh angle
change for them. Because if it was another haunted house, it might really start feeling like the same thing over and over.
Exactly. You know? So that's what I'm most excited about. So that's a good list from us, guys. We're all excited for our horror. Yeah, it's going to be a good year.
Horror thriller.
Yeah.
And that's our episode, folks. That is a wrap. Thank you, as always, to Jay, Greg, and Allie for all the support you do behind the scenes for this podcast. We wouldn't exist without you. To all our listeners, thank you for checking out another episode. Please follow us on social. We're everywhere, and we are on every platform. Mm-hmm. And now you can even find us more simply than ever on addthistoyourlist.com. Got our website.
We got a website.
Get those traffic numbers up.
Leave us reviews, please. Yes.
And we will catch you very shortly.
Cool. Bye, y'all.
Toodles.
Bye.